Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing after midnight on Wednesday morning. Joining us from New York City, where he was at the Philadelphia 76ers Detroit Pistons game on Tuesday night before heading up I-95, is Tim Bonteps.
Hello, everybody. A lot of people in the Sixer locker room watching the double overtime of Heat Hawks. Since we're at that time of the year.
Which the Heat eked out in a pretty eventful, wild night in the NBA. We're going to have, I think, two or three in a row of these. There were 14 games on Tuesday. Joining us from Dallas, Texas, where the Mavericks the Mavericks were on the road in Charlotte tonight, but they got a victory. Van McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Tell you what, we can talk about the NBA, but man, that solar eclipse lived up to the hype. Must admit, it was a nice excuse to have a couple beers in the middle of a Monday afternoon, Wendy. Put the shades on.
My God, you got merch.
Look at these.
Oh, my God.
Listen, the IT department was breaking it down play by play, posted to the gram, which I enjoyed.
Made in
McMahon
China.
Was into it.
Made in China, Texas. Eclipse glasses worked just fine.
They need you to recycle the glasses. Do you want to know why?
Why is that?
Because there's another solar eclipse later this year in Latin America, and they're going to send them there. And you think I'm making that up? I'm not.
You and Pop, just grumpy as could be about the solar eclipse. They asked Pop about a pregame in Memphis, and he kind of...
We got too much to talk about to get into a solar eclipse rant today.
Let me just say one thing real quick. I did watch the eclipse. I was in the totality zone. I thought it was a very interesting moment and enjoyed it. And I watched it from the building that I was in. Was it like 3:14? I came out at like 3:04. I was back in the building by 3:21, went back about my business, enjoyed the experience and moved on. It did not need to bring multiple states to standstills.
What a fraud. This guy spent 20 minutes the other day giving a speech about how it was the biggest scam in the history of scams. And there he is in the middle of the totality.
The eclipse itself wasn't a scam. The idea that it was one of the biggest days in the history of the central part of the country, that was what the scam was.
Listen, brother, I went full Hank Hill, on chairs, out on the sidewalk, cracked open a couple brewskis, baby, and looked up in the sky. The clouds couldn't ruin my day, just like your rant couldn't ruin my experience.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, it was a very upsetting evening Tuesday night in Milwaukee. They scored a huge victory, unexpected win. I know that the Celtics
What are we doing here? What are we doing? Unexpected.
They had just had four miserable losses in a row.
Yeah, the Celtics didn't play Al Horford or Kristaps Porzingis and have literally nothing to play for. And yes, the Bucks look like a desperate team.
Okay.
No,
well,
it was the Pat Bev boost, baby.
I will say this. Out of all the guys in this game, there was one guy that had 20 and 10. And if you put your money on Pat Bev before the game to be that player, collect your winnings, because he was the only guy who went 20 and 10 in this game. I'm sorry, McMahon. I thought it was surprising that the Bucks blew the Celtics off the floor within like the first 10 minutes of the game and never looked back.
I mean, at this point, it's surprising if the Bucks beat any NBA team the way they've been playing.
But it was a very downer night in Milwaukee, despite that, because in the second half, Giannis was felled by a calf strain. This was concerning on a number of levels. He had just inbounded the ball, basically, and just jogging.
Wasn't even jogging. He was basically walking.
Yeah, and he just sort of collapsed, grabbing his left calf. Now, this is whenever you see a non-contact leg injury, it's always upsetting. The Bucks just termed it a calf strain. They sent him off for an MRI. Maybe there'll be an announcement by tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning. I don't know.
He did walk off for people who didn't see it.
Right.
Walked off under his own power.
Even if it's just quote unquote a calf strain, Dame Lillard was saying after the game, he had almost this exact same injury a couple years ago and he missed 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Luka's had a couple of them. One was famously in the regular season finale in 2022 when he got his 16th tee. Then it was rescinded. Man, he gets a lot of tees rescinded. And
got one rescinded this week.
Yes, he did. His third of the year. Anyways, strained his calf in that regular season finale that he was allowed to play in. And he missed the first three games of the playoffs. That's when Jalen Brunson had 41 and 31 and became, instead of about an $85 million man, a $104 million man. And he had another one this year, preseason. And it was about, both of those were about a week and a half. But obviously, it's all about severity. despite my 8 years in college, I don't have a medical degree. So I know there's something to do with exactly the location that's important as well. There's another recent calf strain that unfortunately ended up being something much, much more serious when a future Hall of Famer came back. Obviously talking about Kevin Steele. Yeah. So, wide range here.
The thing about this injury that makes you wonder is that about a month ago, Giannis was a late scratch from a game with left Achilles tendonitis. This was on his left leg. And at the time, Doc Rivers said it had been bothering him for a few days. And so basically we know that Giannis's left Achilles has been bothering him. And he also recently has missed, I think he missed at least one game and has been dealing with a left hamstring injury, which Doc the other night said he regretted not yanking him out of a game after one of those bad losses. I can't remember which one it was, to the Grizzlies, or I think it was to the Grizzlies. And so, you know, it's a little worrisome. Again, you don't want to make assumptions. Certainly we're not orthopedists, what have you, but I don't like that. I don't like the series of injuries there and what that portends. And so the Bucks finally get some positive momentum. Doc changed the starting lineup. It was just the eighth time since Doc's been the coach that they've had Middleton, Dame Lillard, and Giannis play. He changed the starting lineup, took Malik Beasley out, put Pat Bev in, and Bev had his best game as a Buck, despite his own wrist injury. So, you know, one step forward, potentially two steps back. I don't know. I don't know how you want to term it. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but there was potentially a huge event in the next few weeks in this NBA story, Bontemps.
Well, look, Giannis Antetokounmpo is one of the most explosive athletes in the NBA. Calf strains, regardless of how long he can't play for, calf strains are notoriously tricky injuries that can potentially recur. And you're talking about exploding and planning with your left leg if you're a right-handed guy, which he is. Like, there's just a lot of concerning stuff there, obviously. And yes, they hit a ton of threes today. They won this game. That's fine. But they now have to play the Orlando Magic on Wednesday, second night of back-to-back for both teams in Milwaukee. They then go to Oklahoma City on Friday. They go to Orlando on Sunday. And like I mentioned earlier, people in the Philly locker room were watching the Heat game. They were also watching the Rockets beat the Magic tonight in Houston, because Philly needs a lot of different things to come together in some combination to get out of the play-in. And one of them is they need Orlando to lose two of their final three games besides losing to Philly on Friday in Philly. And so now you've got these two games against the Magic where we'll see who's available for the Bucks and what that looks like. And the Miami Heat needed to lose one of their final four games, and their final two games are against the Toronto Raptors at home. And the Toronto Raptors, unless they play the Milwaukee Bucks, are not winning games and haven't won a game in about a month. So they now play Dallas at home on Wednesday in what is a massive game for them, because if they win that game, I think there's an extraordinarily good chance that Miami can get out of the play-in. So these final few days of the regular season are just going to be crazy.
We'll see just how much of the Mavericks they see, because the Mavericks are essentially locked into five. They officially clinched a playoff spot today, guaranteeing that final pick of the Kristaps Porzingis trade finally goes to the Knicks. Much lower than it would have last season if they didn't tank the last couple of games. Look, you gave a nice USWB synopsis of the Bucks-Giannis situation. I'll try to give a little bit of optimism here, and that is, if it is a Luka-level thing, and you can say, well, Luka's not nearly as explosive. Trust me, there's a lot of stop and start, a lot of his game. Again, both of his calf strains were about a week and a half, which would have Giannis coming back maybe for game one of the playoffs. And one of them, he came back and the Mavericks went on a run to the Western Conference Finals. The other one, he came back right at the beginning of this season. And obviously he's had an MVP caliber season where he's played the most games of his career. So hope that it's on the lighter side. But, you know, the other thing is, the bigger issue maybe, is that the Bucks have been pretty bad for quite a while and really could have used a nice week going into you know, the little stretch off before they started the playoffs.
Well, I don't want to say the Celtics weren't hugely invested in this game, but they set a record tonight that will never be broken. It was the first time it's ever happened. It will never be broken. And that is, they were the first team in NBA history to play a game and not get a free throw.
Wow. It was a weird game. So I had it on because, believe it or not, Sixers Pistons was not an extraordinarily exciting game, though there was a stretch in the third quarter where Detroit got within one. And I thought Philly might actually find a way to blow this game, with Joel Embiid going for nearly a triple double and 30 point triple double.
Embiid made one of the shots of the year, by the way, falling down, throwing the ball over the back of his head from about 16 feet. I mean, it was just pure luck, but it was still absolutely amazing.
It was a preposterous play, which he said he thought there should have been a foul called at the other end. And I believe he might have got called for a foul. He says, well, I'm just going to throw this up and get a foul call. He didn't get the call. And of course, it went in. But there was a lot of contact in this game. There were only two free throw shot in total, I believe. Yeah. And the Bucks shot two in the shot two in the first half. Jalen Brown that a blocking
to be there any more than the Celtics, apparently.
There was a lot of contact all over the place watching on television. I thought there were a lot of times there'd be calls. There was a blocking foul where Jalen Brown would have gone to the line that got challenged by Doc Rivers and overturned. It was an odd game. And they didn't have Porzingis and Horford playing, and they missed about a trillion wide open threes. But to your point, McMahon, we just spent last week talking about them losing to Memphis, Washington, and Toronto. So it is important for them to get any win. And now we'll see what they can do over these final few games as they try to lock up the two seed.
ESPN Analytics has them at 71% to get the two seed, but that's that's without factoring in whether Giannis can play, and this team has been all over the place. So I have no idea whether that'll go down. I will say this, the Knicks got a nice win in Chicago. Jalen Brunson with another 40-point game. And that put the Knicks in not bad shape, because with the Magic losing, the Knicks now have can I say they control their own destiny to get the three seed, Bontemps?
No.
Why? They don't control their own destiny.
No.
The Knicks are in good shape. Just leave it at that. Don't do math right now.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
All right, let me tell you who's not in good shape. That's the Phoenix Suns. Things were going so well in this.
They just won the second half.
They did. That's true.
Vincent. Oh, wait, just to circle back really quick. Yes, they do. If they win out the Knicks, they can't finish lower than third.
There you go.
If they get to 50 wins, they could be no lower than third in that case.
All right. So the Suns were, I believe, 4-1 on their 5-game stretch, or their 10-game stretch to finish the season.
10-game dominant.
It looked like they might actually be using this as a springboard, and that springboard has broken, because they've lost a few now. And on Tuesday night, they were playing an important game against the Clippers. They were
coming off the heels of losing to the Pelicans, which really
was a big setback.
Yes.
Setback game. Giannis
best game of Zion Williamson's career Sunday.
I said Giannis. I meant Zion. Zion had 6 or 7 just terrific plays going down the stretch of that game. Arguably his best ever win as a Pelican. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they're still in contention to get out of the play-in and into six. And after losing that game to the Pelicans, you know, had lost ground there. The Pelicans are still on the West Coast this week, so it was a great opportunity for the Suns, especially because Kawhi Leonard, who remains out with the knee injury, the Clippers remain vague, so we don't know that situation. Then before the game, James Harden, who's been slumping and dealing with a shoulder injury, now is dealing with foot soreness, which is one of those nebulous injuries that you never like to hear. He misses a game with foot soreness. So the Suns are at home in a very important game where the other team's missing two of its three best players. And 10 minutes into this game, the scoreboard read Clippers 35, Suns 4.
I mean, that would have been embarrassing for a 16 seed in March Madness.
Absolutely correct.
But honestly, I totally blame this all on Frank Vogel. If my suspicions of what happened are correct, and I'm pretty sure that his pregame pep talk was, fellas, treat this like an elimination game. And he didn't watch the last couple of years of the playoffs, so it was the wrong thing to say.
Well, and unfortunately, unfortunately for the Suns, the Pelicans were playing in Portland. So That ended up with a Pelicans victory. And so
Pelicans did their best to make that scary for a while, but then they eventually took care of business.
They flirted with it for a while. By the way,
they sure did.
The Wolves flirted with losing at home to the Wizards for a while. And then Ant said, no, I'm going to score 51. Don't worry about this one, boys.
By the way, it was a big night for the Clippers because tonight they whilst holding the number 5 seed in the biggest arms race division in the NBA, the LA Clippers clinched the Pacific Division title.
Yeah, they're 4.
Four.
Yes.
A banner shall be raised in the Intuit Dome to commemorate this victory.
Now, if they have one more win or Dallas loses one more game, to McMahon's point earlier, the Clippers will be locked into 4 and Dallas is just about locked into 5.
I mean, that's the one series where, you know, can't quite book the flight yet, but
could as soon as tomorrow or today for the pod listeners.
It's going to happen and it's going to be fascinating. Obviously, it will be the third time that Luka's Mavericks face the Clippers in a series. The first two series were both awesome series, both Clippers wins, both just ridiculous Luka performances. Here's how much has changed since the last time, though, that the Clippers and Mavericks played in the playoffs. Luka is the only current Maverick starter who played in that series. They've completely turned over. They've turned over the starting lineup in the last, 14 months.
Right. But
certainly since they played the Clippers last in that series. And obviously the huge question mark is what's up with Kawhi. We don't know if he's going to be playing in that series. We don't know when he's coming back.
That's correct.
So the stat on this game, all you need to really take away from it, Drew Eubanks, Suns center, backup center, made 2 out of 3, made 2 baskets in the first quarter. He was 2 of 3. The rest of the Suns were 0-16 in the first quarter. the first team to only have one player make a shot in the first quarter since the Pelicans in 2015, which was when Anthony Davis at least made 4 shots. So that's where they were coming out of the gate. I mean, I guess they didn't quote unquote quit. I mean, they quit and then they didn't quit because I guess they did cut it to how close did it get in the?
It was down just a little bit under 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was single digits.
It was never really in doubt. It was kind of, it got to a point where it's like, can the Suns, the worst fourth quarter team in the NBA, really pull off this comeback? How crazy would that be? But they never really got, you know, armpit sweaty type of close.
Just never quite got there.
Just close enough to annoy their fans.
To say the stands at that point.
Well, just to say, why are you playing like this now when you could have played this? And so the interesting thing is this is a home and home. So
home and home back to back Wednesday night in crypto.
So the two teams,
we should still call it,
go to the arena or go to the airport and tail each other's planes over to LAX and have to play again. We'll see who's available in that game for the Clippers, but you'll learn a little bit about the Suns if you don't already have your opinion formed and how they come out in that game. So that was one interesting game in the Pacific Division. The sort of real game of the night in the Pacific Division was between the Lakers and the Warriors. Where
Bontemps, are we allowed to talk about this one? We snuck
Well, we can. Just one thing quick on the Suns, just to point it out. So the Suns now are at 46-33. They're in 7th place. They're a loss back now of the Pelicans. Their final three
games
are
not a bad record, by the way. I mean, it's not what they expected.
All 10 of these teams are going to end up with 45 or more wins. But the Suns are going to end the season here at the Clippers. We'll see how that game goes. Then at Sacramento on Friday and at Minnesota on Sunday in a game Minnesota could very well need to lock up the number one seed in the Western Conference. So, like, there's a world where the Suns are 46-36 and are in the 9-10 game. And there's a world where they're at 48 or 49 wins and they've got a chance to get to 6, which again just shows all these teams in both conferences. There's like 4 or 5 seed differences for most of the teams that we're talking about here. It's really remarkable where we're at with 4 days of games left because there's no games on Saturday.
Which is why there's no shame if you're the Suns and losing to the Clippers, but not when they're missing 2 players, you're at home and you get down by 30 points in the first 8 minutes of the game.
Yeah, the shame is being down 35-4.
Yeah.
That is That is the shame.
That is shameful.
But yes, Lakers Warriors, where the Warriors set a record.
Yes, they did.
With shooting 63% on three pointers from when in taking more than 40 in a game. First time Kenji Andrews, our colleague, tweeted that's happened 40 or more of threes in a game has happened 3,400 times in the history of the NBA, and nobody shot better than the 26-for-41 that the Warriors shot in this game.
Yeah, so it was a red hot night. I mean, Draymond Green made 5 straight threes in the second quarter. I got to go back and look at the last time he's made 5 threes in a game. I'm going to do that real quick.
It's been a minute.
I'm disappointed.
Well, this was a massive game, obviously, because, you know, again, for all these teams we're talking about wildly different outcomes, the Warriors, if they'd lost this game, were all but certainly going to be 10th, and you would have had to wonder what they were going to do with Steph Curry over the weekend. Now that they've won this game, they have games left with Portland and Utah, both very winnable games. And then they host the New Orleans Pelicans on Friday, second night of a back-to-back for the Pelicans, who play in Sacramento on Thursday. So again, Golden State's got a chance. They rip off 3 more wins. They get up to 47 wins. They can maybe get out of the 9-10, maybe get into the 7-8 and give themselves a chance to even get up to the 7 seed. And the Lakers, who didn't have Anthony Davis because of, I believe it was listed as a headache and nausea, coming into the game, and LeBron James was questionable to play with flu-like symptoms. Now they lose. They've only got 2 games left, and they have a chance to get out of the 9-10, but it's very likely now, the way this is broken, that they're going to be in the 9-10. So they end up tied with the Warriors. They have the tie. The Warriors have the tiebreaker now because the Lakers played an extra game because of the in-season tournament. Raise the banner.
That's right. The Warriors, they end up splitting the season series 2-2. The Warriors win on division winning percentage.
Warriors are 7-9. Lakers are 7-10 in the Pacific Division.
That's not very impressive.
Yeah, but the extra game that they played in the division, they won.
Correct.
They beat the Suns. So it didn't hurt them, the extra game. Draymond, the first time he's made 5 threes and a half since 2016. Steph Curry.
And he made none in the second half.
Right. He wasn't going to mess with that perfect game. My God.
He missed.
Well, he was 5-for-5, and then he ended up 5-for-7. He just didn't make any more.
Oh, he didn't make any more. Okay, he tried a couple. Steph was 6-of-6 on threes. Don't know how many Clay had, but they both
was 5-for-10.
It was 5-for-10.
It's the first time they've each had 5 threes in a game since December of 15.
Steph, Clay, and Draymond, you mean?
Yeah, the key one.
Well, that makes sense because that was Draymond's one incredible shooting season. Obviously, the year they won 73-9, he shot really well from three that whole season.
Well, yeah, remember he
shot at 38.8%.
Yeah,
31.8 for his career.
Yeah,
you may remember in Game 7 of the Finals that year, 2016 Finals, he was probably
Cavs corner.
The 28 teams played on Tuesday. The Cavs weren't one of them, but I'm going to make sure that they get in.
We still got Cavs corner sponsored by nobody.
Anyway, Draymond made 6 threes in the first half of he made 6 threes in the first half of a playoff game. That must be a regular season record. He made 6 threes in the first half of the Game 7 where he was on his way to winning MVP, and then I think the Warriors only made 1 as a team in the second half. That was also the last time he scored 30 points in a game, was when he their Game 7 of 2016. So the Warriors have now won 8 of their last 9 games and have finally climbed from 10th to 9th, and it's only by via of a tiebreak. So the Lakers are now 2-4 without Anthony Davis, and it's really kind of 2-5 because he got hurt early in the game against the Timberwolves on Sunday, and then the Wolves with LeBron out of that game too. So, you know, AD, you know, recovering for the rest of this week is pretty important if the Lakers are still dreaming of dodging the 9-10 and in fact getting home court in possible 9-10 game.
Warriors still are 10th. They're half game back, 44-35 to 45-35.
Right. But in my view, if you're tied in the loss column, in my view, you're tied because you have the ability that other team can't, you know.
And the Warriors have 2 wins in their pocket, barring something crazy.
Well, that's a risky thing to say. But
Got Portland and Utah left. I'm going to bank those as wins. And if they don't win them, they don't win them. But so it really, their season, both, and the irony is the Lakers play Memphis on Friday, and the one game left against a live team both these teams have is against the New Orleans Pelicans, who end the season with the Kings the Lakers and the Warriors, or the Kings, the Warriors, and the Lakers, the 8th, 9th, and 10th teams in the West right now. And if Phoenix or New Orleans wins those games, New Orleans will be the 6th seed. And again, if New Orleans loses all three of them, they could be as far down as 8th or 9th or 10th somewhere. Like, I'd have to look exactly where the tiebreaker winds up with that. But, like, it's same thing with all these teams. It's because they're all playing each other in that mix. We're going to get it all decided on the court, which is nice.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
All right, well, going to the other end of the Western standings, the Timberwolves got a victory over the Wizards. Bigger news probably for the Wolves was that Karl Towns has been cleared for contact as he recovers from the meniscus surgery on his knee. You know, Embiid continues to look good coming off his meniscus. I think he had 37 on Tuesday night, Bontemps. I think that...
37, 11, and 7, I think.
And
very good.
And while you will often hear me talking about how there's no such thing as minor knee surgery, there is a long track record of guys being able to bounce back from these trims. And Joel is another example. And you can tell there's some excitement coming out of Minnesota. Ant was talking, I think, at practice or something on Monday.
A walk-off the other day.
It was a walk-off, yeah.
The eyes thing.
Getting cleared for contact, obviously, is a big step.
Yeah, Wendy, you might have been able to be more successful getting a straight answer than me. I don't know that he's going to play during the regular season. I was not able.
I haven't checked on that, and I don't really. I don't think it's a priority. I think. Just the fact that he's moving back towards getting to the court with, you know, a week and a half left till the start of the playoffs is huge news. But Ant had a career high 51 points against the Wizards on Tuesday. He also had first player in Wolves history to have 50 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists in a game. 30 of those points came in the second half.
Well, they needed them because Cat's still out and Naz Reid got tossed after 8 minutes.
Yeah, and the Wizards put up 120 on him, which is not something that the best defense in the league is probably thrilled about, but
might have been looking ahead. On a related note, the Nuggets didn't exactly blow the Jazz out. Those are both games when you looked at the schedule and realized the Wolves were playing at the Nuggets tomorrow in a game that very well could ultimately decide the number one seed in the West. You look at that and you say, you know what? Both these teams have a chance to have their main guys sitting out in the fourth quarter. And both those games were not out of reach when the fourth quarter started. Their guys had to play well into it. So, you know, no rest advantage. They're both traveling. The Nuggets played in Salt Lake City. The Wolves at home, they'll meet in Denver. And that's going to be an entry. Naz Reid will be fresh. He's got the rest advantage. So that one's going to be, you know, they asked Kat during the walk-off tonight, basically, like, you know, do you think you guys will have energy? You think you'll have any energy left in Denver? And he gave a two-word answer. Hell yeah. So, you know, Ant's got those young legs. He'll be good.
Yeah. Ant never is tired until he is. There's been a couple of times this year on the second night of a back-to-back, like in the fourth quarter, he kind of runs out of gas. That's especially since Karl Towns has been out and he's really needed to score. But something tells me that Ant will summon the reserves that are necessary to get that one on, or at least to play the highest level possible. Major advantage for the Nuggets being at home on the second night of a back-to-back. Now, Jamal Murray did play and played very well in Salt Lake. He had 28 points in 27 minutes. They're protecting him. I'm not sure if Malone has said about whether they're going to play him in back-to-backs. Let's check on that. But that's, you know, that availability could be important.
They're now 16-1, I believe I saw earlier, when Jamal Murray scores 25 or more points in a game, which is a pretty good stat.
Yeah. He only played 27 a night. Joker played 34. So,
yeah, well, Joker doesn't get tired.
You would certainly think if he was going to play in one game, given, now maybe they're not concerned about the one seed, but it would be odd if they were going to play him in one game to play him in Salt Lake City and not at home tomorrow against Minnesota.
That would be weird. Because when you play the Jazz these days, both teams have the same goal.
Well, just in general, too, it's a home game against and a vitally important game. It's not even like, well, you play the home game, then you go on the road. Like, Well, plus, logic would indicate Jamal Murray will play on Wednesday, but I guess we'll find out.
Plus, Hall of Stars sit in Utah. Trust me. Like the old Andy B. Larson with the Salt Lake Tribune is tracked this and is very perturbed by it. But like, Stars don't rest anywhere as much as they rest in Utah. It's an actual statistical fact.
Yeah, especially when they're in back-to-back situations. Really wanted to touch real quick on that Heat victory. The Heat are still trying to piece their team together. They have Tyler Hero back, who had 30 in this game tonight, but they lost Terry Rozier with a neck injury. So that key game on Wednesday, I'm not sure where Rozier is going to be. Also, Duncan Robinson is out of the lineup, and they have to travel after playing a double overtime game. The interesting
thing might come down to how much, to Tim's point earlier, how much Dallas tries. I mean, they had a very easy win in Charlotte, but you know, we'll see how much they put into that game.
By the way, nothing but positive feelings from Grant Williams, seeing his old teammates. McMahon.
Of course. Hey, he's still getting direct deposits. His experience in Dallas, as far as, you know, I mean, life could be a lot worse. He got his mid-level.
So the interesting thing about the Hawks is that Trae Young has been cleared to practice coming back from this finger injury. It wasn't, I think, initially believed he was going to be able to return in time for the playoffs, but now it looks like he might be able to.
The play-in, sir.
Play-in. They have lost four of the last six games and three in a row. They're not exactly flying high. But, you know, if you're going to talk about, you know, key players getting healthy, you have to pay attention to Trae Young getting healthy. And this is a team that has pulled off upset victories in the play-in before. They are the most experienced play-in team, I believe. Trae has a number of play-in
more so
victories.
Than the Bulls even, huh?
Oh yeah, the Hawks are the Hawks are the definitive play-in team at this point.
And Trae is the play-in MVP, I believe.
Yes,
you know. So
also back practicing.
That's what I'm saying. Back practicing.
Thanks for this.
Hero, by the way, had 33. So
I'm trying to sort tiebreakers out over here at the same time. There's a lot to figure out.
I just don't want to forget the Hawks and Trae.
We can talk.
Well, by the way,
we're talking about the summer trade market.
We have to pause here because we're talking about the 9-10 game in the Eastern Conference. We have to talk about perhaps the dumbest play in the history of organized basketball, which took place in the Bulls game tonight against the Knicks, where Torrey Craig is on a 3-on-0 fast break.
First off, Torrey Craig gets a steal and has earned himself a free basket, a pick six.
Is on a 3-on-0 fast break with Andre Drummond and Kobe White. The Knicks did not try to get back on the play, really. They were sort of casually wandering back. Torrey Craig decides to try to be Vince Carter and throw the ball off the backboard to himself for a dunk. Andre Drummond, coming behind him, thought, oh, hey, Torrey Craig set me up for a crazy alley-oop off the backboard. I'm going to rock the rim with this. They both go up to try to get the alley-oop at the same time. They both mess it up. They don't score at all. The Knicks get the ball. And then to make matters worse,
the
Andre
best part
Drummond
is down nine when they did this.
Well, yes, that the best part, though it's obviously an unfortunate part, is Andre Drummond then sprints back to get into the play and severely injures his ankle.
Oh, no.
And has to get carted off in a wheelchair. And it does not look great for his availability over the next couple of weeks. And he has been a very important player for them. He's arguably been better than Nikola Vucevic this year. So
in Torrey Craig's defense, he was fouled on the play. Fouled by Andre Drummond, but he was fouled. And he never saw Drummond coming.
As Jackson, big time college hoops fan, very happy about UConn winning this weekend, says in the chat, if I'm Billy Donovan, that play may make me accept a call from Kentucky, which maybe it will. But
I would bet against that one.
I would also. But
not that they would call him, but that he would leave for it.
Well,
but,
I'm sure they will call. They have called him many times in the past, and he has not taken their calls. I would expect that to happen again.
Yeah, so that was sort of a summation of the Bulls season. Once promising and can't get out of their own way.
Not really, because when was the once promising part? I missed that.
Well, going back to 3 years ago when they had a good 30 games with Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso.
They re-signed Vucevic and had high hopes for this year. They, you know, and by the way, they could still win 40 games. They could still finish, I think, 40 and 42.
Yes. The halcyon days of 3 years ago when Lonzo was last healthy. That's where we're talking about.
That's how you pronounce that word.
Yeah.
I'm trying to help you out.
Did I miss anything tonight in the NBA?
Hey, Thunder got a win over the Kings. SGA came back. So did Jalen Williams. SGA looked like himself. Jalen Williams, for most of the game, kind of did look like he was chipping off a little bit of rust. Sabonis' double-double streak went poof.
Yeah,
that was a huge loss for the Kings too, because they're up 20 in that game. And obviously, we've talked a lot about them losing Malik Monk and Kevin Herter. They've got we've talked throughout the pod about some of these games they have coming up against some of these other teams they're fighting with, and that would have been a huge win on the road against the Thunder. They're up 20 early on, and it falls away late.
So the Kings are in eighth right now. If they had just not lost games this year where they were up by 20, they would be in fifth.
Wow.
Because it's happened, I think, four times to them.
That's a tough hit.
The other thing that happened in that game, Josh Giddey, who has been playing very well lately and has been the guy with the ball in his hands a lot over the last, week or two with SGA and Jalen Williams nursing injuries. This was another one of those, how's this fit type of games? 0-for-4 from three-point range. He had 4 points and 4 turnovers, played 21 minutes, and Casey Wallace was in the closing lineup.
We could see that again in the playoffs. By the way, on Sabonis, his streak of the double-doubles ended at 61 games, longest since Wilt had 83 back in the 60s, and it came short on points. He had double-digit rebounds. He only scored 8 points.
Old Cheddar. Cheddar's a factor there.
Put it in the file for Rookie of the Year.
On all defensive teams, too.
All defensive team, yes. Rookie of the Year runner-up as well, sure.
Yes.
So, yeah, I forgot about that game. And the Kings, second most losses when they've blown 20 points. It is 4 than any team in the last 25 years. So that's
I will that's say this. Brutal. I'm curious, are there any other teams from this year that are on that list? I don't know if you have the list in front of you.
I believe the Bulls have 2 or 3.
Because 20-point, Andrew Lopez wrote a story on this a month or so ago. 20-point leads ain't what they used to be.
Celtics have had some. I don't know how many they've had. They had one 20-point lead they lost in the fourth quarter in Cleveland in a game I was at, and I think they've maybe had one or two others. I don't know how many they've had, but yeah, I mean, that was a good story Andrew wrote, and certainly a sort of a new part of life in the NBA these days, where if you get up 20-25 in the first half, doesn't mean a lot. If you can start hitting some threes.
37 was safe, though.
Yes, it was.
Barely. By the way, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has 51 30-point games this year. That is the only player with more since the NBA-ABA merger under the age of 25 was Jordan.
Oh, that means he's MVP, because I've been told if you can throw out a stat and it's only a guy who won MVP that year, that means you should be the MVP. Right?
That's what some people say.
How many technicals did Jordan have in his first MVP season?
Listen, man, those refs, they just keep getting it wrong. I tell you what.
Hey, he can point to it.
Let me tell you though, as a man who monitors these refereeing situations, I might have to go back on my theory.
This is
seismic. This is the biggest natural event since the eclipse.
So this last receiving technical on Luka was late in the first quarter. It's my surprise, but Luka felt like there were some whistles that should have gone in his favor that weren't blown.
You don't say.
While the Rockets jumped off to a hot start. This was the game the Mavs roared back from 22-1 with Luka and Kyrie combining for 85. But it didn't get off to a great start, and I think it was like the last couple seconds of the first quarter, Dylan Brooks got whistled for a foul. Luka walked out about top of the three-point arc, raised his hands in the air like Rocky, and just let out a triumphant roar. Yeah! A little sarcastic celebration. And Eric Dalen, 6'5", about 240 or so, former Minnesota tight end. He'd seen enough, and he teed him up. I'm telling you though, I'm always trying to help the refs. You cannot call the cumulative technical fouls. Those are the ones that get rescinded, where it's just like, you've heard enough. All right, that's it. You right. have to wait until there's a strong moment for
right.
that. That's it.
Right. You don't get to pile it all together. It's not, yeah, I see what you're saying. It's not an aggregated.
I'm sure the referees that listen to the pod will file this away and they'll go, you know what? That McMahon, we really like what he has to say about us. We got this unlocked now.
Trying to help him out. Luke has had 3 tees rescinded this year. 2 have been of the cumulative variety. The other was when he had the, 25-point triple-double in the first half on the Jazz. And I forgot what quarter it was. It might have been like third quarter. Anyways, Chris Dunn decided to get in Luka's face about something, and he was like barking and whatever. And they both got teed up, and that was when Luka had the famous and accurate explanation to the ref that was caught on a mic of, what'd I do? I'm just busting his ass.
You love telling that story.
It was you do love telling that story.
Victor Wembanyama, the first player.
Now, we really don't. The last thing we need to be doing is Victor Corner on the day when he played a non-playoff team.
Second player in history to have back-to-back games with at least 5 assists and 7 blocks. Only other player to do it on record is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I like his new logo. I like the logo. I like the logo.
The logo is cool. The game is cool. We'll be back to Victor next year when they're playing real games again.
I tip my cap to it.
Well done. All right, that's enough.
We didn't get any windy sleep updates.
Well, it's bad. It's very bad.
It's a bad situation
for pre-playoffs. Very, very bad at this point.
You want a Cavs corner? You want a Cavs corner here, Brian?
I do.
If there's a 5-way tie with 48 wins in the Eastern Conference, which would be from 2 to 6, everybody has 48 wins, which if the Mavericks are at the Bucks lose out. I was looking at McMahon's beautiful face in front of me when I said that. The Bucks lose out. It is possible. The order of that would be Orlando, Indiana, Milwaukee, New York, and Cleveland, which would mean the Bucks and Knicks are on the Celtics side of the bracket. The Cavs would get Indiana in the first round. The Magic of all teams would be the 2 seed.
We could have Cavs corner during that brief little discussion about the blown 20-point lead, since they just coughed up a 26-pointer to the Clippers minus Kawhi.
They sure did.
With James Harden watching from the bench.
Well, Cavs are playing the Grizzlies on the second night of a back-to-back. The Cavs have been off for 2 days on Wednesday.
I was told earlier, I want to double-check what the line is. You guys want to guess what the line is in that game?
Well, the Grizzlies unofficially, Taylor Jenkins basically said, yeah, Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. probably aren't playing again this year, which I'm going to go ahead and say they ain't. I don't know what the honestly
they had 13. They had 13 guys on the injury report for today's game, the Grizzlies.
Got it. You got a guess on the line?
They've now used 33 players this year, 23 starters, and 50 different starting lineup combinations.
And as far as the line goes, Donovan Mitchell is listed as available. That's, I think, key for that game.
The line is 18.5.
Oh my God. Stay away.
Odds powered by ESPN Bet, as Jackson says. Accurate. Looking at my ESPN app right now.
18.5.
Let
me look. Huge game.
Let's assume if the Cavs have an interesting, one of many interesting situations left here, because they have 2 very winnable games. They play Charlotte and on Sunday. They play Memphis for Wednesday. And then as we're podding Thursday ahead of Friday, they play the Indiana Pacers at home in what's probably going to be a huge game for both squads. Could have a lot of ramifications both
becoming
ways.
The Cavs quadrant, not just Cavs corner. The Cavs quadrant.
Just trying to get to your Cavs discussion. So they didn't play today on the day everybody played. Got to get it in.
No. The Grizzlies had 8 guys play today. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of those had been either are currently or have been on 10-day contracts this season.
That's wild.
D.G. Jackson was on a 2-way for most of the year, although he looks like he's going to be a legitimate player. And then the 8th, Brandon Clark, has actually been looking okay, but is fresh off of Achilles rehab.
I wonder if he's even going to play second night of a back-to-back.
I'm sure he won't. That's been maybe the lone bright spot of the whole season. I mean, you could say the development of Vince Williams and D.G. Jackson, but
right,
Joe Brandon Clark coming back and looking good, or as good as you could realistically expect off the Achilles, is a nice sign for them for next year. By the way, on speaking of Victor, Spurs Thunder Wednesday night.
Ooh.
Second night of a back-to-back for both teams. And let's hope that if there's a Spurs Thunder game the final week of the regular season next year, it's got a little more overall meaning. Because I'd like to see a Victor Chet game with some stakes in April. That'd be pretty fun.
They both show up though. Chet.
I don't think, has Chet missed a game this year?
He's not missed a game.
He has not missed a game. He's very proud of that, as he should be.
He is very proud of that. You know, I asked him about it, and he basically said if he can play, he is playing. You know, not to the point of being dumb about it. Like, if there's a legitimate injury, he's going to.
Oh, wow. I just looked. I was looking at Jeff McDonald's. I apologize, McMahon. I was looking at Jeff McDonald's Twitter page because I wanted to read a quote that Victor had earlier. And Pop apparently said today that the Spurs might not play Victor on Wednesday against Oklahoma City. So perhaps we will not get Victor versus Chet, which would be very disappointing.
I would be curious to hear Victor's thoughts on that.
Victor likes to play, and he does like to play against Chet. So
this, I thought, was a good Victor quote, which I know I'm breaking my own rule from earlier. Speaking generally about his approach to building his game, Victor Wembanyama told us tonight he tells himself two things every day. One, go harder. Two, at the end of the day, you didn't go hard enough, which I think for a guy we're talking about who's 19, who's got otherworldly talent, that's nice to hear that that's his mindset.
Also sounds like a future Nike slogan.
Certainly does.
Listen, I like a logo.
Slap that alien logo on there, baby.
I like a logo that doesn't have the initials.
It's a good looking logo.
Which is why
it's a great logo.
Which is why the Joker logo is an underrated logo.
Is that still a logo?
I think so. He doesn't have, it's on his shoes. I don't know if they sell those shoes, but.
361 was able to take that logo?
I thought I saw it. Well, I guess maybe I'm behind.
I'm going to have to look into that.
All right. Well, I like that. Even if it's dead, I like that logo.
All right. I'm just saying, do you like the Wimby logo? Because it is Eclipse related.
I like a logo that doesn't rely on the initials. Most logos are initials and their number. That's pretty much it. They find different ways to do that. So I respect it.
All right. I'm glad.
All right. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you to McMahon. Thank you, as always, for watching and listening. And we will talk to you later this week.
Adios, amigos.